And we are live. Peeling potatoes, as I've just been faithfully reminded of by Fruit Loop, who is the young lady grinning like a Cheshire cat there, is episode 17, 17 weeks of peeling potatoes, and there is no end in sight. And
Yes.
today we have a special topic with a special guest, Monica, all the way from Australia. Good
Yes.
evening,
Welcome.
Monica.
Hello. That's a very shy hello.
That's not the Monica that I know.
No.
You have anything to say, Monica?
Haven't had
Are you
any questions
nervous?
yet.
Are you nervous?
No,
Are you
no, no.
under pressure?
I'm just waiting for the questions. I was told to stay on track.
So we get a short hello.
Hello.
Okay. It is actually a serious subject that we are talking about today.
Yes.
So to put it into context, a few weeks ago, Monica, we were talking in another program, Lunch with Janita and Frank. We were talking about clothes and the statement that clothes can make. And Monica wore a shirt that highlights something that I hadn't actually been aware of myself, mental health issues with tradespeople in Australia. And that got me thinking. Also, partly because of that particular meeting of ours, you wore it with great pride, and you had a lot to to say on that one. So I thought we would pursue this in our Peeling Potatoes podcast. And what we want to do is hear Monica's personal story and experience and thoughts on this particular subject, because she is the daughter of a tradesperson, so an expert on the subject from a different perspective. Also, to make it even more interesting, Monica is first generation Australia. Her father emigrated to Australia from Germany in the 1950s. Is that right, Monica?
Early 50s,
Yeah,
1952.
1952. And your mother was Hungarian. Did they meet in Australia, or did they meet in
Dad was
Germany?
actually building a house for my mum's sister.
Oh, okay. And it
And that's how they met.
was it love at first sight? Did you ever
Oh, I didn't ask.
Okay.
I
Well,
don't know. Don't potentially not.
okay. So we're going to spend the next hour or so peeling this potato and discovering and learning about mental health, tradespeople in Australia, German descent, etc. So let's sort of start this with your father. When he came to Australia from Germany in 1952, if you go back to your own childhood, yeah, and we sort of just take the first layer of this potato and go back to your childhood, what sort of stories or images from his working life can you remember come to your mind?
Well, my father came out on a ship from Germany in 1952 with one of his friends, Frank Wells. Frank and my father had met before then, and Frank had come and stayed with my grandparents in Düsseldorf. And then they got a contract in Australia to work for a German building company. So they were young and hopeful. Optimistic, I think, about the future. That was after the war in Europe, where things were
Pretty destroyed, yeah.
pretty, and you know what, they were single, they're both bachelors, wanted to start a new life. So they thought we'll go on this adventure in the hope of a new life in a country that probably reflected freedom and new beginnings. So they got on a ship, which took weeks, and my father was seasick on the ship. I just remember him writing to his sister, laying down. But they eventually arrived in Australia, and they worked for this company for a while. And a few years later, they set up a building company independently, the two of them. But it was very difficult times then, coming as new Australians and especially Germans. Being German wasn't popular after the war. One of their major clients was ICI, Imperial Chemical Industries,
Industries, yeah.
at Osborne, a chemical factory which was English. Because of the animosity between the English and the German in those times, my father thought it was a good move to become a naturalized Australian. He planned to stay here anyhow, but working as a German in for doing a lot of work for an English company limited you, and basically you had to look at the interests of your company that he was trying to establish. So he became an Australian before I was born, which is one of the reasons I couldn't get German citizenship. That's diverging. So they set up a business. A lot of the people who worked for them were Italians. There was a lot of migration from Italy in those times, and they worked really hard. They did a lot of the jobs the Australians wouldn't do, you know, concreting and things like that. And they worked, they were establishing a new life and wanted to work hard. But looking at the people who worked with my dad and for my dad, a lot of them were Italians. Bob Gruber, he was Austrian. The bricklayer was German. Uncle Raymond, the tiler was French. They're all new Australians. They came here to establish a new life for their families or their future families, away from war-torn Europe, which had been destroyed basically. And so they wanted, you know, a more certain future for future generations. And that's why they came here. It was really tough coming to a country with nothing. And I remember my dad, he had his bowl and a cup and some cutlery. His sister sewed a little bag for them. I cried when I accidentally broke the plate. But they came with nothing. They didn't speak the language. Very different to the migration we've got now, where there's a lot of issues, but they came with nothing except hope. And of course, the women were disadvantaged. They came with no language skills, but they stayed at home. But men at least went out to work so they would learn English. I noticed that a few years ago with a lot of the Italian patients I visited, you know, they needed their children who are like my age to translate, but they stayed home and looked after the house, the home and the children, and men went out and learnt English. But yeah, it was tough in those days, and you know, there was the animosity against the Germans. I still remember at primary school getting picked on because I was German, and didn't have the traditional Vegemite sandwiches. So I had rye bread and sausage or cheese or something. And all the Australian kids had Roman sandals. I look at it now, but they did it with hope for the future. I look at Frank, you know, he came and his daughter and I are still, she's 10 days older. They came, and the son's about Frank's age. You came for a better life. And that's, you know, leaving your families at the other side of the world would have been tough, you know. So, yeah.
I can just for the sake of disclosure and transparency. So you and I, we go back a long way. We were kids in Australia, and my parents knew Frank and your father and your mother, your parents, and so their kids, their offspring, and we all mixed and mingled together at various stages. And I remember as a child going to Frank's Frank Wells's house. It was just a couple of kilometers from where we live,
Yeah, wasn't
and it was a nice house. He had done well for himself, and he didn't strike me as a trades Man, he struck me as a self-employed business person who had several interests. One was the Princess Highway Motel, but the other one was also his building company, which he built with your father. Correct me if I'm wrong, was there a third partner, or was it just you and Frank?
No, that was the two partners.
Was the
Hunts
two?
Renner worked for them for a while, but that was as an employee.
Right. Okay.
But they complement each other. Frank sat in the office and
Okay.
liked doing accounts and that, and Dad liked going out in the building site, so they were a good match.
Yeah.
Very different, but they complemented each other. Some people like sitting, and Frank did the accounts and things, and
Yeah, he was the
later on,
fun.
when computers came in, Michael doing IT, they were
Yeah.
trying to do that. That was, but they
And
were lucky. They worked hard, and then they got loyal customers. Coca-Cola is one of them, as I joke that Coca-Cola paid for my orthodontics
I see.
to have my, and Barbara's, so, same orthodontist, to get our teeth straightened. They did a lot of commercial work, and the general manager of Coca-Cola's house was about a street from here. And so they did a lot of light industrial and things like that. And the, customers
Yeah,
then
of
got them to
course.
build their homes. But yeah, it was tough in those days. They built the motel. It was the first motel in Adelaide. Actually, Paul just messaged me a couple of days ago about something, Colin's son. Friend of theirs, he actually put me on the phone. Oops, I digress. He's about to run the Berlin Marathon, as you
Okay,
do.
as you do. Yes, I do.
So yeah, no, they had loyal customers who stuck by them, but it was really tough in those days, and I had someone do some building on my house, which is about 58 years old, a couple of years ago, and it was Australian. And the outside bricks that I've got a two-story brick house, basically. And they're chipped bricks, so they're what you'd call second grade bricks. And he said, "Oh, these are second grade bricks." And I almost cried. I realised that. I took it personally. My dad worked hard as an immigrant. He got the house in Beaumont, which is a really nice part of Adelaide. But just that someone commenting saying these are second grade bricks.
So are you saying that he built an inferior house for his
Well,
family?
not the house. Even in court, when I had the lady, I've just come from the neighbours, who I had to try and get a fence built, if that was a saga. And the husband said, "There's nothing wrong with the building. The building's excellent," but he wasn't going to let me build a fence. But just it wasn't inferior, but that it wasn't. The bricks aren't as aesthetically pleasing as perfect first grade bricks. And I said, "But he built a house, and he built it with his blood, sweat, and tears."
Yeah, that's.
You've come here with nothing. It's not like this lady said to me, this is digressing. I've just joined the Lions Club. So, and it was about, she's in the Pembroke Gold Scholars, which is one of the private schools here, Yanita. And I knew her from there. And I said, "Oh, yes, my daughter went there and I went there for high school." And she said, "Oh, did your mother go there?" And I said, "No, my mother was a Hungarian refugee." But this lady said, "Oh, my mother," and this lady was about 70, "my mother went there and my grandson's just finished there. We've got a 125-year association with the school." And I didn't say, "That's nice, dear." But I'm sort of,
So the picture that you're painting is almost one of two classes, isn't it?
It is, they came here with
The
nothing. Frank can understand, you didn't speak the language. You go to the end of the world. You don't know what awaits you. You give up your security, your family, for a hope of a brighter future for yourself and for your children and future generations.
Yes,
Until you've done that.
Australia is very far away from Europe, and in those days it was even further. I mean, as
In a
you,
ship, imagine being in a ship for
yep,
weeks
yep,
when you sort of get
yeah,
seasick. Laura,
yeah,
Laura inherited Dad's seasick.
it's.
But when this lady said, "Oh, did your mother go to, Girton?" It's been 50 years since they became co-ed, and it's, like the Premier's daughter played rugby with Laura. Oh, she didn't play rugby, I was there, but "Well, did your mother go there?" And I said straight out, I said, "No, she was a Hungarian refugee. She escaped the Russians." That's true. But it's just very, still, Adelaide's very much, "Which school did you go to?" John hates it, Frank and I are okay. We went to good posh schools. Went past your old house the other day. But yeah, it's just so, I took it personally when he said, "Oh, these are second grade bricks." And I said, "He built this came with, nothing, built this house in a really nice area. There was one sort of near your house where the roundabout is. They were going to build originally, and Mum said, no, but it's where all these rock faces, it all falls down when you go up Old Blair Road. Sort of
Roughly.
there was,
I mean,
they thought about there.
it's 50
Yeah.
years ago, Monica. I
I
mean,
know, but so, and so coming from someone who doesn't understand what it's like as a migrant, I take my hat off to people who come here. I still have, like patients and things go to the other side of the world where you don't speak the language. In those days, was lots of Italians. In the 60s, it was a Vietnamese.
it's a
Originally
Vietnamese and
the
it's
Germans in
Africa.
the Brasa Valley, but yeah. So.
So casting this, so you've got this mindset, and of course you've got the identity issues, et cetera, but let's focus
Yes.
on normal dinner table conversations at your home. Did your father ever talk about work at the dinner
Not
table?
really. Down the days, and men, even if he had problems, I remember when Coca-Cola sent him to Tennant Creek, which is the middle of the desert in the Northern Territory, and he couldn't get workers to help him in 1980. He needed to build a warehouse for them, and all these people said, oh, we get sit-down money, so they didn't need to work. So Tennant Creek's like about halfway to Darwin, between Alice Springs and Darwin, in the middle of nowhere. It's,
Desert.
yeah. Then he, there was a plane strike. He got the last plane from Tennant Creek to Alice Springs, and he was going to catch a bus, like a Greyhound bus, back to Adelaide, which would have taken 24 hours, I don't know, but a long time. It's like, so he quickly went and did some shopping for food. In the middle of the night, he was in a motel opposite the hospital, fortunately, and he said he felt really unwell, and he asked them to call an ambulance. And the hotel said, look, we'll take you straight over. In the morning, they rang and said he'd had a heart attack. He was only 51. And they weren't sure if he'd make it, and there was a plane strike. Because, like, you're in the middle of nowhere. If you look at a map, you'll see how isolated that is to try and get someone there. There was a really good German nurse there, apparently, and they rang and said, we're not sure if he'll make it. Friends of mine sort of did a bit of ringing around and found someone flying up to their property up there in a four-seater plane. So my mother thought she'd die in a plane crash and dad would survive. But a few weeks later, commercial aircraft started flying again, and Mum and I went up. Well, we all came back together. Well, Mum was really up there. But it was hard in those days, and didn't know if he'd survive. And then, couldn't work when you're self-employed and you're relying on being able to work to generate an income. Because Frank, Uncle Frank, not this Frank, Uncle Frank was probably an accident waiting to happen, grossly overweight, it was, but when you've got your own business to run and they rely on you being there, it's an added stressor. But men generally don't say things like, that was about the only thing I remember him saying, and we sometimes had dinner with his Tyler, who is French, and we have lovely dinners there. And reciprocate, but men don't talk about mental health. It's different, well, women as well, but he doesn't say, oh, look, I'm really stressed. He would have been, you're trying to keep the business afloat. You've got problems with tradies. Like in those days, if you had someone employed, it was really difficult to sack them. Like when they were building this house I'm actually sitting in, John's house. While they were building it, ours was already built, and the person was trying to get into our house. So Dad sacked him, but he climbed up on the balcony trying to get in. And after that, he had subcontractors because he couldn't. It was unions made it difficult to sack people. Dad was very anti-union, but to be able to work at ICI, sort of, and a lot of his workers agreed with him being against it, but he reluctantly joined because otherwise you weren't allowed on site. But there would have been a lot of stressors, but I never heard about them. He bottled them up. Did that contribute to his, often people just bottle it up. I mean, otherwise he's healthy, but people didn't talk about mental health. You know, they probably thought we're trying to keep a business afloat and pay the bills. And
Know the feeling, know the feeling, and that's the and of course, I don't think the term mental health really was known in that.
wasn't then,
No,
yeah.
you just basically gritted your teeth and said, "This is it. You know, this is the way it is. You get on with it and stop whinging." Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So
Toughen up, princess.
start. Yeah, Nita, your show.
Okay. So for the tradespeople, obviously they often carried their world in their hands, like their tools, their skills, the blood, sweat, and tears that you mentioned. So how did watching your father work shape your sense of identity and resilience?
I'm extremely grateful. I was always a daddy's girl because he let me use the bandsaw. He let me drive the Land Cruiser. I was also a tomboy. But he doted on me. And when, I was 14, I was 14 when he had his first heart attack. And they didn't know if he'd make it. But yeah, I was then very protective of him. And, like I'd go and check that he was still breathing, because he never knew. And, I mean, I was an only child. But it's sort of, I'm eternally grateful and I realise how hard it was for immigrants then. Now we've got a total different immigration pool. We've had just had protests in every capital city last week, which a lot of us, this is off the record, partially agree with. It's just interesting seeing because, like where I live now, it's almost like being in China, the primary school where I went to. And then, of course, housing prices are just rocketed. So the normal kids, like my daughter, you wouldn't be able to afford the housing because they come very cashed up. And so it's just very, we're not against immigration. I'm the child of two immigrants. But it's just very different now. They're letting so many in. So I think that's what a lot of people are saying, that we're not racist. We need the like otherwise the hospitals wouldn't run. Apparently there's just lots of Nepalese as well, carers in nursing home because otherwise who'll be there to look after us when we're old? People aren't having children and those jobs like working in aged care, no one really wants to do it. Those tough gigs, like in those days, the Italians did the concreting, the really backbreaking work. So that's, I digressed. But yeah, I realise how fortunate I am and sort of protective, I think. I'm very grateful to be in Australia, and anyone who complains about being in Australia obviously hasn't travelled. I was just saying to someone today, I remember being in Johannesburg and Durban in 1974, and I wondered why I wasn't allowed on the same side of the street as that other kid. But we were both kids, we're both kids. Hey, what's the difference,
Yes.
And till you experience that, I mean, I got picked on because I was German, and I didn't have the same store-bought school jumper as the Aussie kids. But yeah, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity that, he made this huge sacrifice. And, Frank, his business partner, they died. Frank just went to Disneyland just after my dad died in February. Then Frank went to Disneyland. Frank was about 3 years older, just had his 60th, but he was an accident waiting to happen. Don't quote me on that. He was grossly overweight, and sat in the office all day. And went to Disneyland with his new family and his 10-year-old son and had a massive heart attack there. And if they'd brought him, they would have had to amputate a leg if they had been able to save him. So, their birth worked really hard for their families. Us kids still keep in touch. We didn't really keep in touch in those days with we sort of I didn't only had ha I was only half German, but yeah, we sort of realised how hard they worked, and we're lucky to be in Australia and so grateful for the sacrifices they made. But no, Dad never complained. He never heard. That was the only thing I remember when he was in Alice Springs, and he said that they wouldn't work, but they did sit down money, but they bottled it up, like men did in those days. You know, those people who went to war. I remember saying to one of my patients, I said, "It's raining tomorrow on Anzac Day." He said, "Mon, it rained during the war." And I thought, yeah, men sort of don't mention mental health really, and tend to bottle it up or then take measures. That's one of the things. I was just looking at the statistics. They go to drugs or alcohol to try and help, and that's one of the major issues in the construction industry.
Yes. So that comes down to the shirt that you wore a few weeks ago in our meeting.
Yes.
So there's more than just the
It's more than the
fabric.
fabric. I
Yes.
sent Frank the TED talk from it. It was start by two carpenters. You know, one day his friend was talking to him, and his friend was older and got an apprenticeship as a chippy, they call them here, carpenter. And then 2 days later, he'd taken his own life. You know, for a few days earlier, he was over the moon that he'd got this, and then a few days later, without warning. And that's why these shirts, they're realizing all the problems that are in the construction industry. You know, the job insecurity, often, you know, they're young men sort of gung-ho, and drug and alcohol use. There's quite, you know, deaths due to falling from heights, which could be also due to, you know, drug use. Some places they do drug testing, like here, but some of them aren't, you know, depending on the education levels. Like here, you're always told to, you know, cover up so you don't get skin cancer, but you just go to a building site. Not right now, but it's raining. Got one just about 3 doors away. You know, they're there with their shirts off. And, you know, the fact that they don't think that in a few years, if they keep doing that, they'll be having skin cancers chopped out of themselves. But it's a tough, you know, the job uncertainty. Places like Sydney, where there is so much traffic, they go to job sites early in the morning, continue sleeping in their car for a few hours so that they're there ready. And I mean, so they're not sleeping properly, but just to avoid the traffic in the morning. And, you know, then of course they wonder why they have workplace accidents, interrupted, you know, and sort of problems with relationships, you know, and all various things like agriculture and the construction industry have the highest number of accidents and fatalities. You hear about them all the time, these scissor lifts and things. But yeah, unfortunately, there's sort of quite a bit of drug use, you know, like, well, in many young people, well, some young people don't. And of course, in jobs when you're young and sort of social drugs, which are, what's that, acceptable, that's probably not the right word, but it's like, and yeah, they have this uncertainty. And then COVID came, you only had a specific number of people allowed on job sites, and all the other problems. Now, a lot of building firms are going bankrupt. So, of course, the people are then unemployed. Materials went up significantly with COVID. And, you know, if you signed a contract that you'll pay 100,000 for a house and then the materials cost more, then the builders left paying the difference. And you know, just if there's so many building firms going broke, and then the employees and contractors are often left, or it happens every week, not being paid. So you know, whether you're the tradie, whether you're the plumber or the electrician, if the company you're working for and building for goes bankrupt, you don't get paid. You've still got a family to feed and yourself and bills to pay, which adds to the stresses. So there's, a lot, and it's sort of a lot of uncertainty there. And it just happens every week. Or there's unscrupulous operators who aren't licensed. And, they go up to someone and say, "Oh, you need a new roof," which elderly people, "or you need your driveway. We've got some leftover bitumen." This is commentary. And, then they go, there's a big plumbing place. My dad actually built the building on the corner almost as you got the freeway, and they've demolished it, and they're just quoting ridiculous amounts called Metropolitan Plumbing, and they've just found him to be really shonky, unscrupulous. I don't know if people know what shonky means.
Oh, we
And
do.
quoting elderly people, and they're saying now consumer affairs are saying always get a few quotes. Having a reliable tradie, one of ours, I don't know if Frank remembers, Bob Gruber, our painter, his sons took over the business, but they referred a plumber to me, and he's been our plumber since I was about 15. I think he's Frank's age now. And I thought, no, please, you can't retire. You've been our plumber forever, and you're honest and reliable. But yeah, there's a lot of stressors in the trade, when you're left out of pocket because the companies go bankrupt, and suddenly you've done all this work and you still have to pay for the material you used. And, then the plumbing suppliers or whoever you bought it from is wants to be paid and demands payment, and you're not getting the payment from the people who employed you. You're in a very difficult position.
So when you wear one of these shirts, or when you wore it a couple of weeks ago, what were you peeling open for yourself and for others when you put on the shirt?
Because it's so bright, people ask, others have said, the story behind it, they've asked and sort of said, oh, and they'll sort of starts a conversation. Because often men are afraid to open up. I don't know if it's in their DNA or you put on a brave front of
Think
their
so.
bravado, often I don't know what the younger generation is like, but even or everywhere mental health, if you break your leg, that's fine. You can say, or I've got a sore tooth or whatever. But mental health has still got this, people think you're weak if you say you've got mental health issues. And that's why people, I think, are reluctant to open up and admit that they might have issues until crunch time. Here we've also got very high rates of suicide with veterinary surgeons. Just come from the vet today. And they find the cost. In Australia, we've got Medicare, which supports, our going to the doctor or our medication, but we haven't at the vet, and it's cost like this guy just said, oh, do you know the heartworm injection's $190? I just thought I'd warn you for first. I said, yeah, that's fine. But elderly people, or they blame the vets, or vets have always got these very sad jobs. There's not many fun jobs in vets, often it's end of life care and things. But mental health is always going to be one of those. I think we're all conditioned to put on a brave front, and I think men more so. I mean, I look at the older generation. My father would be, God, 96 now. But I sort of see this uncle who Frank knows, who's 107, and sort of stories. They didn't complain. They just put up. They just kept going. And then you see, young tradies, and like the gentleman who started, he said, this friend was cheerful a few days ago, but obviously inside he'd been bottling up a lot of stress and worry for whatever the cause was. But you hear it, yeah, with quite a few with young men. And that's what this is trying to help. And, like truckies, truck drivers who are, unfortunately, our rail system's not that good here, and we're a very vast country, and there's everything basically goes by road, and you've got deadlines. Woolworths or Coles Woolworths is South African, want you to deadlines, and there's a lot of drug use in the transport industry as well, you know, to stay awake because you have to get there by this time and, you know, then unload my godson. Yeah, my best friend who died, her son's actually a truck driver, and you've got the deadlines and you're on the road all the time, and you know, so many of the road to Melbourne's notorious, from Adelaide to Melbourne, when they should be using rail, but because our country's so vast, rail's not really a viable option. And they've got drug use to stay awake, and then suddenly there's a lot of drug use, unfortunately, everywhere here. They'll watch out for the drunk drivers, but unfortunately, methamphetamines, the rich people use cocaine. Apparently, you sort of hear it in the papers. And, you know, marijuana use is common, and they all affect your mental health. You know, which comes first? Do you use the drugs because of your mental health, or do the drugs affect, or they do affect your mental health? There's someone, a family, Frank would probably know, he was bumped into the son the other day, who's totally, they had six boys. The husband, they were Dutch parents, the Vanderpennens.
Those
And the
make
boys all went
cartoons.
to CBC, Catholic school, you know, there, and they just had six boys, and one of them got into hydroponic marijuana, which is worse than normal stuff, and went totally loopy. Not fruit loopy, just loopy.
Just loopy.
But yeah, and unfortunately, that's the things. But and you know, there's problems like now they had those bench tops, which everyone wanted, those nice kitchen bench tops and the silica dust from them. So there's been a lot happening. Those people were grinding it or cutting it to size, and the fibers have led to basically death sentence. They've been outlawed only this year or last year, because of the fine dust particles got into your lungs, and often people weren't using protective equipment. And suddenly you're young and you find out you've got a death sentence hanging over your head, and you don't know, you know, how long you're going to live, is pretty
It's scary.
scary, you know. But there's all these things. But yeah, there's you know, oh, there's always the, a few years ago they had the government scheme with insulation. And a few people got electrocuted in roofs, you know, by faulty wiring and things. So unfortunately, you know, you always hear of the electrocutions and things like these, and you know, young people, and they're dying. You know, they're tradies, and without warning. I remember Dad; he had his plumber who was on the roof at Coca-Cola, and somehow he fell off the roof, and he survived. Remember the guy, but
Probably
you know,
couldn't work
suddenly when
anymore.
one of your employees, you know, is there and falls off the roof onto concrete. Thankfully, he survived and was okay. But it's a risky business.
It is.
You know, everyone wants houses now, and now there's all this demand for housing, and sometimes people are taking shortcuts because they want things built quickly. So it's a high-risk job often. You know, especially with a lot of them are untrained, just unskilled labourers, rather than tradespeople, but you need the unskilled labourers as well. But yeah, there's a lot of stressors involved.
So, with thinking about all these stressors, do you think that the mental health struggle for tradespeople are different to normal workers or normal professionals?
Probably, yes, there would be different to professionals. You know, a lot of people, if you're in a government job, you've got more job security. And professionals often, you know, people say, oh, you're better off. Are you better off, you know, having being a profession and going to university? A few years ago, Frank and I went to private schools in Adelaide, and it was the sort of thing, was not the expectation, but you know, you went on to uni, but then they got the plumbing union or someone to come and talk, and it was actually on the ABC, and said, look, you know, get a trade. And a few years ago, bumped into one of Laura's school friends, and he, you know, a lot of them have got apprenticeships. Dad was a judge, and he was absolutely loving it. But you know, they've got different stressors. You know, you don't always have the job security. If you're in a job, you know, you'll have, if you've got, you know, a contract or whatever, rather than casual labour. Casual labour, you don't know if you've got a job tomorrow. And you've still got bills to pay. Now, you know, like everywhere, the cost of living's increasing. But it's, I think, different problems. You know, if you've gone to university, a lot of them have uni debts to pay back their university education. But tradies is sort of, or job insecurity, oh, and various problems, you know, the risk of the job itself, like they were building the new hospital, Royal Adelaide here, and someone got killed in a scissor lift, and at least one. And then, you know, on mining sites, that's another risky occupation. And often they're out in the wilderness, in the very remote areas. So yeah, but it's different stressors, but you know, sort of tradies, and especially if you're self-employed, you have to, you know, being self-employed or being employed have different stressors, you know, because you have to keep your business afloat, which is, you know, what my dad and Frank had to do. And you know, you had to pay the people and always make sure the money was there to pay your tradies first before you got paid. You couldn't have holidays. It was lucky there was a partnership with two of them, but otherwise you can't get away on time. You can't go on holidays. And you know, but they always made sure their tradespeople were paid before they paid themselves. But now there's, you know, when prices are going up and there were shortages because this wasn't being imported or whatever, the parts during COVID, and you'd have to wait, and so you couldn't finish jobs, so you couldn't sign off on them. And that's why, yeah, almost every week a building business goes under, and you know, some with massive debts, you know, and of course the poor people who miss out. The way you set up a company is to protect yourself. My father did it as well, and that's a smart thing to do. But so you know that, so at least you don't lose your house if things go pear-shaped. But the employees, you know, if they don't get paid, and they've bought supplies from places, they're in a difficult situation. You know, there's often unscrupulous operators out there. You know, my dad and Frank did the decent thing and were, you know, well, respected and honest. But now, because of the way it's totally different now, this was like, oh, almost 40 years ago they weren't here, 39 years ago. Things like COVID changed everything, and you know, everyone wants their house finished and complaining that there's faults in their house. And
I'm just wondering if this mental health discussion, if it's you could almost say it's endemic because you've got the tradespeople doing their job under precarious circumstances, but you've got
it's in many industries.
yeah, exactly, and you've got professionals who may suffer from mental health issues, consciously or subconsciously.
Oh, here's another one, just is online. Shift work and the physical nature of construction work may contribute to increased cocaine use to offset fatigue. Cocaine use, coupled with heavy alcohol use, highlight the need to increase workers' understanding of the health and safety risks associated with cocaine, both alone and in combination with alcohol. But then they say the biggest issue in the construction industry, labour shortages. Now there's all this sort of housing boom. I don't know what all these people, or they're complaining that with all the immigration, Australians can't buy houses. Construction industry challenges like labour shortages, economic uncertainty, rising costs, and an urgent push for sustainability reshape how firms plan, build, and manage projects. Add in rapid tech adoption, tighter regulations, and evolving client demands, and the industry is on the verge of a major shift. This is just last month. This is Construction Industry Challenges 2025's top 15 issues and solutions. Our biggest cause of fatalities is, falls from height, is a major cause. People taking shortcuts if they're in a hurry. But yeah, there's cocaine's fairly common use as well, but a lot of the young ones use meth, amphetamines, and it's scary when you're on the road. In our day it was alcohol. Alcohol's still there, obviously, but there's so many of these new things now. I was sent to the drug clinic once at Norwood to be in charge, and it was an education to this little girl. But there were professionals in there. But yeah, they've got a lot of industries are having trouble with often,
And the
they
question.
promise you big money if you go to the mine sites, but they're in the middle of nowhere. And that's the thing. But then they have these FIFO fly in, fly out. And they promise you big money, but while you're there, you're stuck in, at the end of the day, you're stuck in your room without your family. Okay, you get the big money, but then that, causes mental health problems, but you're so far from them, and they're finding that as well, and that's stuck in mining, which is one of our major industries. But yeah, a lot of industries, and often it's the industries where mainly males are working, agriculture, etc.
I saw a post on Facebook, I think it was last week, for one of the fly in, fly out, also for mining industries. So they do offer a good pay, but taking into consideration what they have to do, that is, and they'll be alone in a place that they don't know. So stuck in your room, stuck in the mine, but they earn a lot of money. Yes.
That's what John did when I met him 17 years ago. Yeah, he'd fly in as an engineer, but then you just stuck at their room. You go and eat your dinner and go back to your room. And
Yes.
if you've got a family, and something goes wrong with your family or the wives, there's adds to stressors, a bit of the isolation. You're stuck in the middle of Australia, so large, it's just miles away. John was working at the top of Western Australia in the Pilbara. But in 50 degree heat up there, so
It doesn't get much remoter than
no,
that part of the country.
in the boondocks, as they say here.
Yeah.
But yeah, and a lot of these young people, they think, oh, great, lots of money. And like we had the mining boom, now they're finding out. So they'd buy jet skis and fancy four-wheel drives and SUVs and all that. They've got this now up in Queensland, for instance. And then when the mining boom goes, chung, they realise they've bought all these things rather than security when they had lots of money. Oh, I've bought all these fancy toys. And yeah, but it's often in the industries where males are, and often with potentially with lower education levels, or so AFL footballers, they're not rocket science. They're finding that out all the at the moment with that they're our football players. They're made out to be God, and they're earning so much money, and they get so many head knocks, and then they say, oh, we've got CTE from all the concussions, and then well, I thought, well, isn't that to be expected? If you're, getting lots of knocks to the head, you could sort of, and they've got no plan B when they finish. But yeah, there's a lot of industries now. It's not just construction, but unfortunately, a lot of those.
And there's probably a knock-on effect because somebody who suffers from mental health issues will complain or say something in a more negative fashion than is possibly necessary. So it's almost like you've got the dog chasing its own tail. Cause and effect. Someone does something wrong because he's under stress. The customer who is also under stress will probably overreact more than is necessary. And they just have this vicious circle of negativity and because somewhere along the lines, society has come off the rails, to combat this, or because nobody actually speaks about it. And the world that your father walked into, I mean, I think mental health issues in Europe were probably even stronger in those days after the war, because Europe basically was destroyed, or large parts of it was destroyed. Families ripped apart because of the political divide between the Warsaw Pact countries and the NATO countries. Your father and Frank Wells, they immigrated to escape all of that. And now, 50 years later, it's almost like they're being revisited by the same issues, but on a totally different level, maybe on a more hidden level, on a more invisible level. Seems to be part of human nature, one could almost say.
But then they're their stressors, and then of course then they come home and get angry at the wives or drink too much, and that leads to relationship problems, which then the cycle continues. With relationships break down because of excessive drinking or because they're angry and stressed, and domestic violence is a big issue here at the moment. And a knife crime, but that's not a story. They've just Victoria has just started this amnesty on machetes, so they've got all these bins, but they've got cameras, and people aren't going to hand in their machetes. So it's like, only the honest people will. Like when we had the firearm amnesty years ago, I handed in my dad's rifles, but the criminals aren't going to, as you can see in Victoria.
Well,
But yeah, no, it's just
but
men have to learn to, and I think, open up, or and people be aware of the signs to look for potentially. But the stigma behind mental health has to disappear. While it's a stigmatized that you're weak, or men have got this sort of sense of bravado often. They don't want to be the first one to complain or show signs of weakness.
I
Why do you think it's so hard for them? Sorry, Frank.
No, it's okay.
Why do you think it's so hard for them to open up and not to be quiet or stay silent?
I think it's how you start as a child. Boys don't cry. Well, it's true, when your boys tough it up, when you have, I don't know, I've only had a daughter, but Frank would probably be better to answer this question. How boys are meant to be the tough ones. It's okay for girls, if you cry, boys cry, don't be a girl. Girls are, always shown to be the weaker sex, but boys are meant to be tough. I think from an early age, that's just how it's okay to cry. Who was a friend? I had a friend who's a few weeks ago, his mother was dying, and he was devastated, and understandably, he was crying and said, "That's okay, I can understand." But he was just devastated. I went to his 60th the other day, but he's a mum who he totally loved, and he was a really good son. She was dying and in palliative care with cancer, and he was just crying and said, "It's okay, But I think this way, from an early age, boys is meant to be the tougher of the two. And you don't want to. Well, I don't know, Frank. You're better at answering this question. But you don't want to be the one. If you fall over in the schoolyard or whatever, it might hurt, like really hurt or whatever. But you wouldn't want to be the one to cry. You just say, "Yep." Even though inside you're crying, and just all you want to do is cry. You don't, because you don't want to be seen to be weak. But
There
you're
is
scared of how the others will react.
there is there is there is an element of truth in what you say, but from my somewhat different vantage point, yes, I was a boy. I still am a boy.
Still are. No. I'll take your word for
I am, not I was.
you sort of laugh about it, but as you both know, my mother lives in this house. That brings with it a whole set of issues, but I actually believe You don't stop being a son or a daughter until one's parents have passed on, because the umbilical cord is then permanently cut. Otherwise, it's just sort of chipped at and severed. Beside the point. I remember as a kid in Australia, you sort of, so I am German, and I was at that time still a German. And I can relate to the pressure that kids can be really, really cruel. And I was chastised as being a Nazi, because the 1960s, 70s, the war was still relatively fresh. Australian television was infested with war films at that time, and it was always the Allies who won, and it was either, depending where the scene was set, it was either the Japanese who were the baddies or the Germans who were the baddies, and I was a German. So, a kid who does not know his history will say, Frank's a German, he must be a Nazi, because that's what TV tells me. In fact, that this could be no further from the truth is a different ball game. But I also think, and I'm going to make myself deeply unpopular here, there's also a anthropological cultural difference. Anglo-Saxons, from my vantage point and from my experience, Anglo-Saxons, and that is the Brits, the Americans, the Australians, have had a pioneering spirit in modern day. Before that, it was the Dutch and the Italians and all these colonial powers, the French, who built their own empires. But I think the biggest empire was actually the British Empire in its heyday. And if you sort of combine elitism, the wealthy people who went out and conquered other worlds, Australia as a penal colony, has shaped that nation, because England threw out its human waste, sent it across the other side of the planet, and out of which emerged a society deeply distrustful of authority. And we're going to do it our way, mate. And if I go to the bush, then no one's going to see what I do, and I can be free, and et cetera, et cetera. So it was a ticket to paradise. It was a ticket to freedom, to a certain degree, or you would hang. And there's a societal mental difference that I notice in this society that I do not see in European society, Central European society, where maybe also in modern parenting, I think we've gone to the exact opposite now. We pamper kids too much, because
Helicopter parenting.
helicopter parenting, because health and safety has now become so dominant, that we're raising a generation of kids who cannot face reality of life. So the pendulum has swung on the other side. So, and I'm sort of culturally, I'm stuck between these two different worlds. And yes, I run my own business. It's had its high points. It's had its deep low points. It's on the ascent again. But I also appreciate, maybe it's also my age, I appreciate the vulnerability of being human and actually saying, okay, I've screwed up, or I didn't see something, or I don't understand something. Help me, because there's only so much you can do. Working by myself for of quite a long period of time before, after I had my own language school. But then when I had my own language school, there was this insane pressure from our customers to adapt to their world. And cash flow was always a problem, because they would refuse to pay you on time because there is no cheaper loan to have than to keep the money back from your customers and use it for other, I mean, it's interest-free credit. And they would, and I know from experience, they built security and firewalls so that the person responsible for pushing the button on the computer to release the payment, was virtually inaccessible. And with new customers, I always followed the paper trail or the breadcrumb trail to see, okay, where is my invoice going to, and who processes it, and how can I reach this person so that I can say, look, I know you can't make a decision, but you can speak to the person who can, because, we're all humans in all of this. So there is a cultural difference, a systemic difference, and that leads to mental health issues, because for some strange reason, when we enter this world of business, common human sense and human decency somehow stays outside the door, and the bigger the company, the more critical it becomes. I can, case in point, I sent the first invoice to somebody a couple of days ago, and I specifically in my email said, it's the same, it's the same customer, but a different division. And I said, look, with that in that division, it works fantastically. And I would appreciate that in our collaboration, you do the same. Monday will be the telling point because that's when the invoice is due. We will see. And that sort of sours the relationship. So there's a whole lot of factors that flow into this, which influence how we think, how we act, how we feel. And if there is nobody you can speak with, and have a down to earth conversation. And from a male point of view, women are the better listeners.
That's why my female GP is always running late. You know, when I go to a doctor's surgery, there's about 10 doctors there. The female ones are always running late. Men just do, male doctors there, fix whatever needs fixing and out the door. But yeah, the female doctors are great, but they listen.
I mean, do you see it from your Australian perspective, and Janita from your South African perspective, whereby again, that's a slightly different kettle of fish because it's not English, it's also Dutch and Afrikaans, so there's a little bit completely different mixture. But do you see this cultural difference that I'm trying to explain, that the English mentality or the Anglo-Saxon mentality is one of bravado, strength, hurrah, we can do this. I mean, I could be wrong here. How do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, we're the only state that didn't have convicts. South Australia didn't get any convicts. But yeah, and no, it's very much, yeah, they still say, someone even said to me the other day, with, I went to this Lions dinner and oh, I can't remember if I told Frank, but this gentleman said, oh, I'm from Iserlohn. You wouldn't know where that is. I said, yes, I do. My family are in Zoaland. And, you know, but I said it's near where the dam busters blew up the dams. But then even someone else said, oh, yeah, we beat, you came second. It was a friendly, you know, joke. It wasn't meant in any. But he said, oh, yeah, your side came second. But yeah, I realized.
Nice
So
way of
I thought
putting it.
there's no, there actually no winners, but I thought I won't say that. But yeah, Australia's very much the stiff upper lip, like Frank mentioned about those poor little boys in their shorts at school, at the posh private schools with their shorts in the middle of winter. It's very much stiff upper lip. And I thought, this is crazy, you know, but that's like the royal family. No, never whatever, never something, never complain.
I mean, this is an interesting point. Can you actually pinpoint it to a small, very elite group of people?
You want, yeah, but they had all the shorts in winter. And when I'd sit here at
But
PAC,
they,
I'd say, "Well,
yes,
this is insane."
but they all had the privilege of hot baths and nannies taking care of them.
Oh, yeah.
When behind the walls, they said, "Mummy, I'm freezing, because you made me wear shorts." Well, don't worry, dear.
Shorts. But that's why when this woman said, "We've had 125-year," I said, "That's nice." And I thought, if her mother, this lady, had been well into her 70s. And I thought, and I just thought, I mean, my first boyfriend, like someone came into the bookmart, was Andrew Simpson, Simpson Washing Machines. And, oh, Simpson, they used to make all washing machines. And his mum was also related to Penfold Wines.
Yeah, I know the wine family, but not
Yeah,
the
the
same.
wine. Well, his mother's half and half. She'd, and, like Fergie and Andrew stayed at their house in Adelaide when they were in Adelaide, when Fergie and Andrew were still happy. But that was rough. And he accidentally crashed Mummy's Mercedes sports in the fog after I'd gone out with him, not a year later or something, and died, and so did his girl. But it's just like, and his mum was lovely, she only died last year. But this establishment, when this woman said, "Oh, did your mother go to this posh school?" And I said, "No, she was a refugee." And she wrote, I thought, well, I wasn't being rude. I just said, well, I was being honest. It's just very
Sorry.
much, Adelaide's still very much, where did you go to school? John hates it, but he went to some school in England, in Wigan near Manchester. But, here it's, oh, where did you go to school? And it's like, and my friends who are from, not from Adelaide, they really hate it, but it's so
So
potentially
maybe,
judgmental,
yeah, and maybe that's part of all the not only just the regulation of an industry and in worst or best practices or the lack of, but also maybe a bigger picture of society.
Yes.
We need to sort of start wrapping this up. So, if your father could sit with us in this conversation today, what would you want him to hear about how we talk about mental health?
I'd say speak up. Don't bottle it all up because obviously stress is one of the contributors to heart disease. I think, I don't know if he got high cholesterol. I've got the gene, it stopped with me, and they treat it like, but it's okay to speak up. Or, here they have Are You Okay Day in June, I think it is, whenever it's a specific day, Are You Okay, and ask people, check on your mates. But then it was very much, you didn't have, you've got your friendship net, your network, your friendship network. He had Frank, they were like brothers. Rome on the Tyler, we'd catch up with for dinner, or they'd come to our house and have lovely dinners. But that it's really important to have friendship networks, to have mates. And someone you can say, "Hey, I'm not okay," and won't judge you on it. But yeah, often, when you're too busy working for yourself, you're trying to keep all the balls in the air, and keep everything afloat, and you don't have time for things. And when I look at his friends, he's had a few, they were more like clients, always best, the other day's land agent, the other Dixons. But people, you'd say, "Hey, let's go out." Oh, he played golf with some. But yeah, in those days, when you're self-employed, you're too busy trying to keep everything going. To have friends you could say, "Let's go out for a coffee with," or, well, they didn't go out for coffee. We'd have friends for dinner or something, or they'd play golf occasionally, you'd go for a walk with me. But that's really important, that you can have someone you can trust and say, "Hi, I'm not okay." And, have that friendship network, that support network. When you're feeling glum, when you say, "Hey, let's go out," and not lock yourself away. I said that to the lady next door, who's 84, and the husband died. I said, "Look, you have to get out, and not just look at the walls." But to have a support network, which I think in those days you're too busy, you had Frank, and but
Is
to
there
have friends and to say, "Hey, who you trust, and you can say, 'Hey, things aren't okay,' and they'll back you up and say, do this, or you need help."
Are there professional
Yeah,
help?
professional help. I remember a friend, she's now in America. Basically, the stories were at uni together. She was about 21, I was 32, and I was already a nurse. And she came up to me one night at the uni where we lived, and she said, "Oh, you're a nurse." This was in Lismore, like country New South Wales. And the story was, she told me that night, and I've Googled it, and her father murdered her mother, told the mother to write a goodbye note to the mother, to the kids. Murdered the mother. He tried to kill himself, but the police got him in time. He's just spent 26 years in jail, and now he's still a Facebook friend of hers. She's done really well and is, her movement. She's now in America and just married a Australian Navy officer. She's done really well in work health and safety. But just that night, she said, "You're a nurse." I said, "I know nothing about mental health. I'll take you to the local hospital, emergency department, and they can find someone." But she just had a meltdown. Whatever triggered it then, but I mean, then she told me the story that day, that her father had murdered her mother. I thought, doesn't get much worse than that. And lovely girl now, now 28 years later, we keep in touch, and but then the father's now a Facebook friend, and I thought, wow, if my father murdered my mother and had made me made the wife write a note to say goodbye to the kids, I don't think I'd be talking to him. Not that forgiving. But she's just amazing. But yeah, mental health, and I thought when you realize someone needs help and to get the appropriate help for them. But yeah, a lot of men won't admit it, and then unfortunately it's too late. And then your friends think, what did I miss? Did I miss something? But yeah, unfortunately it's going to happen more, and especially with drug use is becoming more prevalent. For various reasons, and we'll see. So there, so hopefully that was sort of some of the on track. I tried.
Interesting, very insightful.
Yes.
A lot to take on board.
Yeah, it's just interesting, for the young ones, you sort of, yeah, it's very different to when Frank and I grew up.
We're not that old.
We're not that old, but yeah, it's like, you sort of see it now, sort of accept, or not acceptable in some places. Like, for instance, you've got no idea, friends in Queensland where drug use is more prevalent. They don't do it, but no, lots of people do. And I've just had this sheltered life. My dad would have a glass of wine with his dinner, and that was it. So, yeah.
All right,
Lovely
Monica.
to see you both, and say
Yeah.
hi to Martin when you see him. When do you see? Do you still see him?
Yes, I see him in a couple of hours, actually.
Oh. Please say hi from me.
I will do so. I will do
But
so.
nice to see you both. Sorry I wasn't there last night. It was this concert. I bought tickets last November. So John wasn't keen to go, but once I dragged him there, he sort of said, oh,
All
my
right.
unsocial butterfly. But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. So that's something. But take
Okay.
care and enjoy your week. And best wishes to your mum and Mary, Frank.
We'll pass them on. We'll pass them on.
Good to see you both. And I'll
Okay.
see you on Thursday.
Thursday for
Take
lunch.
care.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Take care,
Thank you,
Monica. Bye.
Monica. Thank
Bye-bye.
you. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Better stop the recording, hadn't I?
Yes.